The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
Well, there were more protests overnight in the US after another fatal police shooting, this time in Detroit. It's been a summer of protests as the pandemic has brought the roots of disadvantage and anger into sharp focus. Our next guest, Mark Blythe, has been looking at the causes of anger in Western democracies and how to fix it in his new book, Angrinomics. We caught up with him earlier and I first asked him if there's more anger now than ever before.
Well, I mean, maybe there was a bit more anger when we were actually fighting World War II, but I would say it's kind of elevated, and it certainly is the motif of the moment. I mean, whether it's the Black Lives Matter movement over here, or the COVID lockdown protesters, or the Texans who think that masks mean communism, people are getting very, very upset about anything at all that is smacks of the political. And underlying all that, we would argue, are basically a series of economic changes, which have basically disadvantaged both privileged and unprivileged communities in ways that they're simply not used to.
At its core, Mark, is there this sense that, you know, the 70s and the 80s were turbulent, difficult in many ways, but in a lot of developed Western societies, there was this sense that the 90s were going to fix everything. You know, in America, there was Clinton, in the UK, there was Blair, and then it didn't actually fix things.
I think that's exactly right. Well, when you come out of the 70s and 80s and the sort of the inflation crisis of that period, if you think about people like Thatcher and Reagan, regardless of what you think of them and their politics, they meant what they said. And one of the things that they did across the world was to say, we're not going to take inflation very seriously now, and up we're going to have these big independent central banks, and we're going to, as they called it, depoliticize monetary policy. And well, that had two effects. The first one was, it meant by the time you got to the 90s, there weren't that many tools that politicians had to affect change, because we'd given them all away to the technocrats, and also because things were going kind of well, wages were still rising, etc., in many places, we didn't think there was that much to do. The problem was the whole business model was essentially based upon, it's all right for the top to make off with everything so long as we can tax them to redistribute to the bottom. And if you do that in countries that are heavily financialized, like the US and the UK, when you have the huge crisis in 2008, that business model evaporates. The central banks step into the breach, violating everything that they've ever said before, and bail out the whole system with trillions in liquidity. And then you turn around to the people and say, now it's time for a wee bit of austerity for you lads. It's not a winning combination. It's almost as if you'd sat down and said, how do we undermine faith in our ability to deliver on our promises? This would be what you would do to get there.
In dealing with the issue of possible solutions, you talk about a national wealth fund. What would you like to see happen there?
So here's a very simple way of thinking about this. Rather than bailing out the people who basically have all the assets to start with, why not do this? Every time there's a financial crisis and even a COVID crisis, the price of equities, the stock market, falls by about 50%. And what we've gotten used to is the central banks come in and go, lads, don't panic, don't worry, we'll buy everything, we'll make sure you don't put any losses. And all of that becomes a big deficit and a big debt. And then you turn around to the voters and say, oh, I'm sorry, lads, no more schools, we had to bail out the banks, only they don't tell you the last bit, right? So how about we do this instead? Rather than just putting a floor under those prices, why don't we buy all the equities that these guys dump in a panic? And this time we don't give it back. We put it into a big, passive, professionally managed wealth fund. And we allow it, when it comes back, as it inevitably does, to generate that 6% a year real return that it gets. And you run that for 10, 15 years. At the end of that, you would have an enormous amount of wealth you haven't taxed anyone for, that you've generated by taking on the risk what finance is meant to do. And you could distribute that to the bottom 80% of the population in terms of housing, in terms of educational subsidies, etc., etc. We just lack the imagination to think this way.
But where would the national governments get the money to invest in the fund? I mean, if they borrowed it, insofar as they can borrow money cheaply now, is it a good idea for national governments to borrow money to play on the stock market?
Well, normal times you might think there's a bit of risk in that, because normally you'd be borrowing at 4%. So if you only generated a 3% return, you'd lose. But right now, pretty much every A-rated sovereign in the world can issue long-term debt, that is debt over 15 years, at a negative real rate. So that means that they're basically paying you to sell them the debt. It's literally, arithmetically impossible to make a loss in that situation. So why would you not do it in the current environment? You can lock those rates in for 30 years. Why wouldn't you do it?
What other solutions do you think government should look at?
There's quite a lot that could be done that's already sitting in the existing toolkit. One of the things that we've seen with COVID is they're still doing all this quantitative easing stuff, but really the most important stuff has been the wage subsidies. Now, that goes under the moniker of helicopter money, but essentially it's direct payments to citizens. If you want to cure a recession, it's dead easy. You don't have to fart around with housing prices and bond prices. Just bang everybody a cheque for $1,000 a month until the recession's over. You'll know it's over because inflation will go up, and at that point you put up interest rates and you soak the money back out. So there's lots of things that we're already doing indirectly, we're just not calling it by its name. Other things we could do, Ireland's an interesting case here. A few years ago, you guys were ordered to basically collect lots of taxes from Apple, and that's still been sitting on the naughty step. Well, another way of doing this, because the Americans have said, you tax our digital guys and we'll slap tariffs on you, is to stop giving them all the data that they rely on for free. We should be selling them the stuff that they use on Facebook. We should have national data trusts that basically take our data that we're willing to sell them and sell them like we do the mobile phone spectrum and get some money back, which you could plow into your sovereign wealth fund, and that would generate more returns. So there's tons of stuff lying around. We don't need to basically reinvent the wheel or have a huge giant revolution. We just need to actually be brave and creative with the stuff that we've got already.
I suppose some people are very apprehensive about the idea of selling or giving their data to large corporations, but equally they might not be too comfortable about selling it or giving it to the state.
Absolutely, and you know, you could put various safeguards into doing this, but at the end of the day, in some shape or form, until democracy breaks down, the state has a responsibility to the citizens for maintaining the safety of its data, which is why we have GDPR and all the stuff that's in Europe, and that works quite well. On the other hand, you're already giving it to Facebook, and every week they say, oh, promise we won't sell it to third-party developers, and every other week they do. So, you know, what exactly is the baseline we're acting from here? Anything's better than where we are.
Mark Blythe, co-author of Angronomics there.